Hey guys, welcome back to a brand new episode of the Haunted Detective Podcast. Today we are going to be doing something a little bit different. We are sharing an episode from one of our favorite podcasts, S Spooky. Carmen, Christina, and CJ are Latina creators, and we decided to swap episodes. So they're going to be sharing one of ours, and we're sharing one of theirs. This is something that might be happening more than a few times, so I hope you guys enjoy. But before we kick it off, I just want to make a quick announcement. Things are changing around here at The Haunted Detective. Instead of releasing Monday mornings, we're going to be releasing every Wednesday from now on. It just feels like a better day. It feels more right. You know what I mean? So without further ado, here's the case of Miriam Rodriguez.
Hi, everyone. This is Christina.
And Carmen.
And this is another episode of Spooky Tales, the podcast for all things spooky, but also sometimes very sad, tragic, infuriating true crime stories. And that's what we're doing today, Carmen.
Great.
Yeah. And we are going to have a listener story, but it's going to be at the end of the episode before spooky recommendations. That's for the case. We're just going to dive into this week's case. I don't know if you've heard about, and I didn't know her name for the longest time. I just heard about the case. But although like headlines or articles that announced or talked about it all said the same thing, it was like, woman takes down cartel by herself. Do you remember seeing that?
Yeah.
That's who we're talking about today, that woman. Her name was Miriam Rodriguez. And again, it's very sad. It happens in Mexico. And so if you, you know, don't want to hear a very sad, tragic case, then skip this episode. Miriam Elizabeth Rodriguez Martinez was born on the 5th of February, 1960, in San Fernando, Tamaulipas, in Mexico. And everyone that knew her since childhood describes her in the same way, that she was fierce. She was a fierce, strong Mexican woman. And San Fernando was her home. It always has been. But it wasn't the place that she knew from her childhood. It changed a lot, especially, you know, starting in the late 1990s. And I don't know if you know where San Fernando in Tamaulipas is, but I'm sure you can imagine why it changed so much, because it became a very dangerous place. It's 85 miles from Brownsville, Texas, you know, along the U.S.-Mexico border. This made it very easy for it to become stomping grounds for cartels because of the location. It's along highways that lead directly to the U.S. It's in the desert. It's very easy to make, you know, different smuggling roads for drugs. So it was like an ideal location for cartels. And that's what happened. By the time she was an adult, that's what it became. And she was there in San Fernando raising her three children, who were now adults as well. Luis, Azalea, and Karen, with her husband, who was also Luis. There, they had a cowboy apparel store called Cowboy... No, sorry. Where's the name? I wrote it down. Rodeo Boots.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. And they've had this store for a very long time. They didn't want to leave, but many were leaving because, like I said, it was a very dangerous city by this time. It's the stomping grounds for Los Zetas, and Los Zetas control San Fernando. They were formerly, for you know people that don't know, Los Zetas were formerly part of a bigger cartel, the Gulf Cartel. They were the armed branch of the Gulf Cartel. And then like former military, Mexican military members branched off and became Los Zetas. So they're trained, they're armed, and they're dangerous. Ever since they split from the Gulf Cartel, they've been feuding with, you know, that cartel and
numerous others.
Yes, thank you. And I mean, again, very dangerous. Los Zetas, they need to finance their way of life. They're feuding with other cartels. So they started kidnapping innocent people for ransom, stealing, extorting local businesses, all typical cartel things. And many, many, many in this area have, and all over Mexico, have been killed by the cartel. In 2010, a mass grave of 72 Central and South American migrants was found in San Fernando.
When? Sorry?
2010. And they were possibly killed because they refused to work for Los Zetas. That was like one working theory. The other one was that Los Zetas believed they were going to be recruited by the opposing cartel and killed them before that happened. But I mean, that's still 72.
Yeah.
Central American and South American migrants. Like,
one would be too much, but 72, that's just like out of this world.
It's horrendous. And then in 2011, the following year, another 193 remains were found across seven different mass graves in San Fernando, all cartel related.
How many? Sorry.
193 remains across seven different mass graves.
Every time you see the numbers, like, I don't grasp it.
It's unbelievable. And then those are the mass graves, but it's not uncommon for at least once a month for 20 people to be found in different areas to this day. That's still the case. So yeah, many fled San Fernando because of the increasing violence, but many stayed, including Miriam and her family, except her oldest son, Luis, moved to 2 hours away. But a lot of people stayed because, you know, this was their home. This is all they knew. And they had, I don't know, thriving businesses like Miriam and her family. And then on top of the business, their own store, Miriam also occasionally did some nanny work in Brownsville, Texas. She would drive across the border to work there a few. Sometimes she'd stay like a week and then, you know, go back home. And then her youngest daughter, Karen, and her husband would work at the store. And like I said earlier, Luis, the oldest son, had moved 2 hours away to Ciudad Victoria, hoping to escape the violence. The Rodriguez Martinez family, they were not rich, but they were okay. They were better than most in this area because of, you know, their business and the other work Miriam was doing as a nanny. So Acelea and Luis were gone from the home, and Karen, who was 20, she was still working there, finishing college and working at the family store. And then on the evening of January 23rd, 2014, Karen was leaving Rodeo Boots. She was in the family truck, trying to merge into traffic when two trucks pulled up on each side of her truck, forcing her to come to a stop. Ugh. Then armed men forced their way into the family truck and drove away with it, with Karen still inside. And they drove to the family home. No one else was there because, you know, Miriam was in Texas at her nanny job. We don't know where the dad/husband, where he was. He was just gone at work or something. I don't know. So they bound and gagged Karen and then left her laying on the floor. And then there was a knock at the door, and it was the uncle's mechanic. He had stopped by to work on the family truck. So the kidnappers grabbed him, tied him up, but then they later let him go for reasons unknown to this day. We don't know why. They didn't need him, I guess. Then Acelea called Miriam, and immediately Miriam thought something was wrong because, you know, Acelea was crying, and she told her, "The cartel has Karen. We received the ransom call." So Miriam left the nanny job right away to head home. One of the hard parts is she had to ride the bus.
God, she has this urgent crisis going on, and she has to wait for the bus, be on someone else's time.
Yeah. And then on top of that, it was a 2-hour bus ride, which is just, I can't imagine having to sit there knowing this is happening and there's nothing you can do because
you can't do anything. Yeah.
Yeah. You're trying to get there. As soon as Miriam arrived in San Fernando, Acelea picked her up and they got another call to Miriam's phone. And it was the kidnappers again, with Karen this time. And, you know, it was the typical ransom call where they forced Karen to give the message of drop the money off here, and then they just hang up. They didn't give the family a chance to talk to her or anything other than Karen giving them the message. And the family, they talked. They were like, "Well, this is the cartel. This is a business transaction. They don't want Karen. They want money. So if we give them the money, obviously we'll receive Karen in return."
And that makes sense, to think that.
Yeah. Plus, she wasn't the first kidnapping at all. This was such a common thing.
Yeah. People knew how these things went.
Yeah. It wasn't a matter of if, but a matter of when for a lot of people. And so they gathered just under $10,000 with their own savings. Then they went out to get a loan at the bank. And it was so bad that banks now had loans to give families for ransoms.
God, that's terrible.
Yeah.
I can't even fathom being the loan person and be like, our loans for ransoms actually have lower interest rates. What the fuck?
Right.
That's terrible.
It really is. It's crazy. It's terrible. But they gathered all this money. They followed the kidnappers' instructions to the T. They dropped the money off at the health clinic like they were instructed. And they waited at the local cemetery. This is where the kidnappers were supposed to give back Karen. And they waited hours. The kidnappers never showed. So 2 days later, Miriam asked for a meeting with the members of the local cartel, and to her surprise, they agreed. So she met with a tall, skinny, light-skinned man with curly hair. They met at a restaurant called El Junior, and he told Miriam that Los Zetas did not have Karen, but he could help find her for $2,000. But then he was contradicting himself in everything he was telling Miriam, because he was like, "Well, I'll find her for $2,000. Also, Karen has been such an ideal captive person. She's been so easy to deal with."
Okay, so you can't tell someone, "Hey, I don't have your daughter, but also your daughter is a good kidnapping victim."
Yeah.
Wow. Also, these kind of situations are so difficult because, yeah, like anyone could be like, hey, I can, and you hear about it all the time. Like, I remember this other, I don't remember the case or the names of anybody because I'm horrible with memory, but I remember that it was this girl. I say girl, but she was probably like early 20s. She went missing from a boat or something like that. Her family didn't know what happened to her. And then during their search, they hired a private detective and gave him so much money, but he had been making up everything he was doing. He wasn't helping them at all.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And they just gave over all this money. And so like, I think about that guy you just said, saying like, oh, I can help you find her for $2,000. And it's like, it's so horrible and opportunistic and just so easily to be taken advantage of in that state of desperation.
100%. And it wasn't adding up, but Miriam, she'd do anything, obviously anything to get Karen back. So she gave him the $2,000. And during the meeting, the man had a walkie-talkie on his belt and there was conversations going, coming in and out that he wasn't responding to, but she overheard the same thing again and again, Sama. And she was like, that must be his name or a nickname. That'll come back. So then over the next weeks, Sama, he stopped answering the phone. So obviously this was what you said, him being opportunistic. The cartel probably didn't even know he did this. He just was like, oh, this is an easy way to make $2,000. And then others appeared claiming to be Karen's kidnappers. And it was always the same thing. They asked for more money. The family continued to pay, hoping to find Karen.
It's because they don't know who it is either. Yeah, this is terrible.
It really is. And after every payment, there were more calls demanding more money. And after each payment that failed to return Karen, they began to lose hope naturally. And I mean, when things like this happen, like no one knows how they're going to react, what's going to happen. But sometimes families lose hope. They start to fall apart.
Yeah.
So by this time, Miriam had separated from her husband. She had fallen into despair. They both had fallen into their own despair. He was not doing anything either. He was, depressed. And so was she.
I mean, it's very common for that to happen, like to families, even when someone dies, like a child of theirs dies.
Yeah, they don't make it.
Mm-hmm.
By this time, Miriam was living with Acelea, the oldest daughter, and she was neglecting pretty much everything. Then one day, suddenly, weeks after the first payment was made, Miriam got out of bed, she showered, she fixed her hair, and then she just turned to Acelea in like a super matter-of-fact tone. She told her, Karen's not coming back. Karen's dead. And Acelea was like, what's happening? She was confused. Then Miriam told Acelea she would not rest until she found the people that took Karen. And she vowed to hunt them down one by one until her own death. This is when Acelea understood the mother that she once knew was gone, completely gone. Any hope that Miriam maybe had felt or still had, it was not there anymore. It was now replaced with the desire to avenge her daughter. And so instead of continuing in the loss and despair like her husband, Miriam started to make a list of like people she knew that were in the cartel, people that she had seen, or because you know you're in these towns and you know names, like, oh, that house in that corner.
Yeah, the house in the corner belongs to so-and-so and he's a member of the cartel, whatever. Yeah,
exactly. So she started to make a list of the things that she knew. And then thanks to the mechanic that was let go during Karen's kidnapping, he was the one that confirmed Sama was there.
Oh.
Miriam met with him and got the details. Then Miriam cut her hair super short, dyed it a bright red, in hopes that when she found Sama, he would not recognize her as Karen's mother, the woman he met at that restaurant. So then Miriam spent hours looking through Karen's Facebook profile, looking for clues, just clicking on tag picture after tag picture, just sleuthing, looking for anything that would help her. After days of the search, she finally found something. It was a picture tagged with the name Sama, and it was him. She recognized him from her meeting at the restaurant.
So she knew him.
Yeah, she recognized him in the picture, and he was with a young woman who was wearing a uniform of an ice cream shop in Ciudad Victoria, where her son lived. She knew the uniform because she'd been there before. So then she went to Ciudad Victoria and she stalked the store for weeks until she memorized the young woman's schedule. And she waited outside of each shift waiting to see when Sama would show up because she knew he would. And when he finally did, she followed Sama and the ice cream worker.
Damn.
Yeah, she was doing like legit detective work.
Yeah.
When he finally showed, she followed them to her house and she marked down the address. But she knew she needed more information than just an address. She needed like names, more information on him, anything, right?
Yeah.
So then she found one of her old government uniforms from years ago when she worked at a health clinic, a government health clinic. She put the uniform on. She used an old ID that still looked like legit. And she spent the day conducting a fake poll in the neighborhood, going door to door, getting information on everyone, including Sama.
Oh my God. How does she think of this? Wow.
Yeah. The determination. And yeah, she got the basic information. With this information, she went to authorities, local, state, federal. She tried them all, but no one was willing to help. I mean, it was a cartel case. Like, nobody wanted that.
Yeah.
And not to mention the people that were working with the cartel, because we know that's a thing too. So nobody wanted to help her until one federal police officer did. He remains anonymous in all of the articles. He never says his name, but he did say the following about her. When she pulled her files onto the table, I had never seen anything like it. The details and information gathered by this woman working alone were incredible. She had gone to every single level of government and they had slammed the door in her face. To help her hunt down the people who took her daughter, it was the greatest privilege of my career.
Oh, that gave me chills. Oh my God.
I know.
And you know what? I would have remained anonymous too if I was him, so...
Oh, 100%. The files he mentions, though, she had like, you know, those folders that have, you open them and they, like an accordion file, I think is what they're called.
Yeah.
She had one of those. And that's where she put everything that she was learning into. So it was like a legit big case of files that she carried everywhere with her. So with this information, there was finally enough for an arrest warrant, but it took a while. So when the arrest warrant was finally issued, Sama was nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, I knew it.
Yeah. And this frustrated Miriam, of course, but she continued her work to gather more intel on everyone. Eventually, though, Sama did turn up 2 hours away in Ciudad Victoria. And it was September 15th, 2014, the day before Mexican Independence Day. And still on that day, there's festivities leading up to El Grito, right?
Yeah.
So places are still closed. There's still, you know, things going on. And Luis, who had his own shop in Ciudad Victoria, he was getting ready to close his own shop to celebrate when one last customer walked into his store. It was Sama.
I fucking knew it. Oh my God.
I know.
Leave him alone.
Well, no, Sama didn't know who he was. He just walked in.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Whew. I thought he was going to go kill him or something.
No. He just walked in to buy some things.
Did then Luis know called. About Sama? Okay, never mind.
No, you're fine. Luis recognized him from his mom's files. So he immediately called Miriam and then he followed Sama.
Oh, wow.
And like did not lose trail of him until the police arrived to arrest him. And of course, when the police arrested Sama, he was like, I have a heart condition. And he was like crying and screaming like he couldn't be arrested. Basically being a little bitch.
I have no words.
But he was arrested.
Good.
And then he folded. He started giving names.
Wow.
Yeah, everything. He filled the details that Miriam was missing in her files. So arresting Sama led police to then arrest Cristian Jose Zapata Gonzalez, who had just turned 18 and was pretty young to be part of the cartel.
That's young, yeah.
Yeah. And so when he was picked up and being interrogated, Miriam sat outside of his interrogation room and he could hear Cristian repeatedly asking for his own mom and repeatedly saying he was hungry. And Miriam entered the room, gave Cristian her own lunch, and then went and bought him a Coke.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And the police were like, what are you doing? Let him suffer. Like,
yeah,
you know, he did this. And then Miriam told them, like, I'm still the mother, and that is a child, no matter what he did, because she's an amazing person.
She's gonna make me cry.
You're gonna cry. I cried. And after she did this, he started talking. And it's, I mean, maybe because of the kindness she showed him.
Yes. Yeah.
So he said everything. And he then said he could take them to the ranch where all the kidnapped were held, killed, and buried. It was going to be like this whole big operation, a raid. and Mexican Marines and police worked together during the raid, and they let Miriam participate, and she put on a Marine uniform.
Oh my God. I mean, she did all of the front work for them, so they better let her.
Right. And when they arrived at the ranch, it was like a scene out of a horror movie. There was a noose hanging from a tree. There was debris everywhere. Turns out there had been a firefight between other cartels there 10 days before this raid. And then they also went through a brief firefight.
Oh, wow.
There was some cartel members that were killed. I think 2 female members were killed. No, sorry. They were found and the Marines killed them on the spot. That's what happened, which they're not supposed to do, but they did because they're also kind of corrupt.
Yeah.
And they found some people that were kidnapped and being held there. Sadly, Karen was not among them. And so the raid was semi-successful. I mean, they saved some people. They found some remains. But Miriam, of course, she wasn't happy because Karen wasn't there.
Yeah.
And as she was looking around the ranch, she found a stack of personal belongings. And among them, there was a scarf that belonged to Karen and the seat cushion Karen used when she drove the family truck. So Karen had been there.
Wow.
After they analyzed and, you know, identified the remains, they said Karen wasn't there. So then she had to be somewhere else. Miriam had to keep looking, right? As they were leaving the ranch, Miriam passed by a barbecue restaurant that's kind of at the entrance of the dirt road that leads to the ranch.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And she remembers this restaurant. She had been there 2 days after Karen's kidnapping with Acelea. And sitting outside of the restaurant at a table, there was a girl that Miriam knew, Elvia Yulisa Betancourt. And Elvia was sitting by herself, sipping a Coke. Miriam approached her and asked, like, oh, have you heard about Karen? Everyone had by then. The whole city of San Fernando knew about Karen. And Elvia was like, no, I haven't heard what happened.
So that's weird.
It's suspicious, right?
Yeah.
And that's what Miriam thought too. And it felt like a stab in the back because Miriam had known Elvia her entire life. Elvia had been abandoned by her own mother and Miriam frequently helped her out, gave her Karen's old clothes. She looked out for her, and Elvia answering this was so suspicious because everyone knew what was happening. So Miriam left, and when she got home, she returned to her research and she discovered that Elvia was romantically involved with one of the suspected kidnappers of Karen, who happened to be in prison for a completely different reason. So Miriam went to that prison. And just like she had at the ice cream shop, she waited there every day for hours because she was like, Elvia's going to visit this guy. They're together. Like, I know it. She did this for weeks. By this time, she had also found out that one of the ransom calls for Karen came from Elvia's house.
Wow.
Miriam's suspicions were right. Elvia finally showed up to visit her imprisoned boyfriend. And when she did, Miriam was ready to have her arrested.
Miriam just getting it done.
She is. So this was 3 cartel members involved in the kidnapping of Karen arrested. She crossed 3 names out of her list. But as she continued to investigate, her list grew and changed because, you know, she was researching.
Yeah.
And then during all of her research, she also began to work with other families of the disappeared. They began going to her because they saw what she was doing.
And what she was capable of too. Yeah.
Exactly. And it kind of reminds me of Marisela Escobedo Ortiz as well, because when she started walking every single day to the judge's offices protesting, and slowly she was joined by more and more people, like people, other family members would disappear, daughters, sisters, mothers, they started going to her too. And that's what happened here too. She began an organization, and this organization would grow to have 600 families in it.
Wow.
Which is way too much.
Yeah.
So, you know, she was doing this, she was doing her research, and then her research yielded another name, Enrique Joel Rubio Flores. And she learned that he had left the cartel and became a born-again Christian. So she found his hometown, traveled to it. It is 3 hours away from San Fernando. It's Aldama. And so she drove over there and she met Enrique's grandmother at the local church. Enrique's grandmother told Miriam that Enrique had always been troubled, but he finally found God. He was attending church again. So Miriam knew, well, he's going to show up to Mass. Mm-hmm. She was right. So she started attending Mass herself, waiting for him to show up. When he finally showed up, she had him arrested. And Enrique's family begged her not to do this, to have mercy.
No.
With Miriam.
No.
Yeah, exactly. That's what she said. She was like, no, where was his compassion when he took my daughter?
You can't just say I'm a born again Christian and everything you did wrong is absolved. That's not right. No. So the only way to hold him accountable is the criminal justice system. And that's what she's doing. She could have done worse.
She could have killed him. Like, she could have killed all these people.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And instead, she's living it up to the justice system, which is not always right, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And so, yeah, she had him arrested. And now at this point, she's 2 years into her fight for justice for her daughter.
God, 2 whole years.
Yeah. And it's the same thing that we said in the Marisela Escobedo Ortiz episode when we talked about women murdered in the military, about Vanessa Guillen's mom and family members. There's no chance to even sit with your grief,
yeah,
because they're over here fighting against whole ass governments, whole ass cartels. There's no, yeah, no chance to grieve. And that's gonna take a toll. Like,
oh yeah,
I can't even imagine. So yeah, 2 years after Karen's disappearance, she's still researching. She's continuing with her list. And the next person on her list was a former florist turned cartel member. She had even bought flowers from him when he was a florist, before he joined the cartel, when he was like just a struggling florist in the streets. He claims he had been forced into the cartel and then he escaped. So when Miriam finally tracked him down, he was selling sunglasses and CDs near the US-Mexico border. He immediately recognized Miriam when she was approaching him. So he ran. Miriam ran after him, tackled him down, held him at gunpoint.
Wow.
And yelled, "If you move, I'll shoot." And she contacted the police and she held them there for an hour until the police arrived and arrested him.
And you know, it's sad and it's true. Things like that do happen. People are forced into the cartel. But again, he did something wrong and he has to be held accountable. So
exactly. And she's doing this.
Yeah. Because again, she could have killed him.
Yeah. No, for real. And so, yeah, she continues with her list. At this point, she's 3 years into her fight for justice. Almost 10 members, or actually by this point, 10 members that were involved with the kidnapping had been arrested by her, basically. And then it was March 22nd, 2017. There was a prison break in Ciudad Victoria. 29 prisoners had escaped by digging a tunnel. Most were members of Los Zetas. And the 10 she had released, or she had, sorry, imprisoned, also escaped, including one of the actual killers of her daughter. Two of them, including them. One had been captured, one of the killers, but one was still at large. And Miriam had requested protection from the police. But even at this point, she said she wasn't afraid to die because she died the day they killed Karen.
It's terrible because I know that grief, and especially when someone is taken from you that way, it's not, you know, natural death. It changes people, but she, you know, she still has other, even though they're adults, other adult children, you know, and it's like her other daughter said, the mom that she knew died or was gone, whatever her words were, something like that.
Yeah, it wasn't the same woman anymore.
Yeah.
No, you're right. So even after the prison break, Miriam was not done. She even, when asked, like, when is it enough? She was like, me faltan dos putas. There were still 2 bitches left on her list, is what she would tell people. And these were the 2 women that she knew were involved. So she had finally found one of the 2 women, La Guerra Soto. That's what she was known by. She had escaped or left the cartel life. She was now a nanny in Ciudad Victoria. And Miriam found her, sat outside of her house, waiting, sitting there, you know, listening to the radio and just waiting for her to come out. Her car battery died while she was doing this. And Luis arrived to jump her car. And then they watched the house together. And then when dawn broke, Miriam called the police. La Guerra left her house and Miriam ran after her. And she, like, La Guerra ran, Miriam chased, and then she pulled La Guerra down to the ground by her hair and held her there until the police arrived. She did, however, break her ankle in the process of tackling Miriam. And I mean, she is not a young woman. She's in her late 50s at this point, 57 by this time.
To be catching up to people and tackling them and shit.
Yeah. So yeah, she broke her ankle. By this point, 3 years later, Miriam had also been to the ranch 3 times and had insisted for it to be checked for Karen's remains again and again. And this is when finally they researched among the first set of remains that were found in that first raid. And they found that one of those femurs had belonged to Karen.
Wow.
So now it was like officially confirmed Karen was dead. And they kept searching on Miriam's assistance and they found more bones. And it wasn't a complete skeleton. So Miriam insisted they kept searching until they had all of Karen, but they still held the funeral because they had most of her now. So they held a funeral for her.
God, that's terrible.
It's terrible. It really is. And then on May 10th, 2017, so about a month after finding La Güera and breaking her ankle, Miriam was still in crutches. It was Mother's Day, May 10th. They had been celebrating the day and it was 10:21 p.m. She was parking, heading back home. She was finally living with her husband again. They had reconciled. She parked on the street, got out of her car when a white Nissan truck pulled up next to her and fired 13 times. Yeah. When he heard the shots, her husband ran out of the house. He found her laying on the ground. Her hand had been reaching for her pistol that she always carried with her. And he called an ambulance and she sadly passed away in the ambulance on the way to the hospital.
It's terrible. I'm like, how much loss can one family take? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I have chills because it's like, it just reminds me of Marisela Escobedo Ortiz, who fought and fought and fought against such a corrupt, unjust system.
Yeah.
And in the end, she was also killed, likely by the same people that killed her daughter. And she's not the only one, obviously, because now we're talking about Miriam, who ended up the same fate as Karen.
Yeah.
And even the whole like Niuna Mas movement that I think we've talked about this, maybe not, but it began in Argentina, the whole color purple. And I want to say that it was, again, a mother who lost her daughter in this manner.
I think you're right.
And then she is also killed in the same way. So it's not like just Mexico, obviously, but it's still so, I don't know, infuriating, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, like femicide is alive and real out there.
Yeah, that's why International Women's Day is such a big deal.
That's what it's really for, okay, people. Well, not that. It was working class women. But, you know, violence, rampant violence against women internationally is a part of it. Fighting against that and awareness of that. So that's why it pisses me off when people act like it's like a Mother's Day type of day for women. And it's like, no, we're not celebrating women. This day, I'm sorry to say, it's not to celebrate women. Do not give your wife flowers for National Women's Day. Why don't you go and, I don't know, do something to uplift and fight against the oppression of women worldwide instead? Because what does giving your wife flowers do? Nothing.
Yeah. Become a feminist instead. It's not that hard.
Why don't you clean your house instead?
Yeah, no.
Okay, rant over and go on.
So her death was a shock to the community. There were protests demanding justice for her death. Even the governor of Tamaulipas himself went on the record saying, like, we're going to find her killers. And two men involved in her murder were arrested 2 months after her death. But they weren't, they may have been the ones who, like, killed her, but they were not acting alone because these were two 18 and 19 year olds.
Oh yeah, definitely were not.
They were given these orders by someone. There were 100% more people involved, more men involved in her death. And to this day, they remain free. No one else has been investigated. And on top of that, those two, the 18 and 19 year old, received a 10 to 15 year sentence. So on top of that, her family, especially Luis, her son, who has pretty much taken over her work, but is afraid.
Of course. I mean, at this point, his sister, Karen, now his mother, explicitly targeted for her search and fight for justice.
Yeah, he even has said this is a joke of a sentence, like 10 to 15 years for the death of his mother. And I mean, the other people involved remain at large. Like, but yeah, he took over the group, the 600 member group of other missing kidnapped people. But after her death, the group's activity diminished due to the fear caused by her death, because obviously it's scary. And what message are they sending? Like, you become too loud, you become too active, you say too much, we're gonna kill you. And we can get away with it. And so far they have. So yeah, the group is still there, but yeah, the activity has lessened. And in fact, it wasn't until another boy was kidnapped in the same town, San Fernando, that the group began to act again. That boy is Luciano, and the family even knew, I mean, they all knew each other. I'm gonna see when he was kidnapped, what year. Very recently, 3 years ago. Yeah, and it was like such a similar case. Trucks pulled up next to his, took him. The family paid the ransoms just like they were instructed to, and the cartel still killed him. And they were like, we're not going to do the same thing Miriam did, because like they were scared, because it was all still so fresh. Her own death was, what, 4 or 5 years before his?
Yeah.
But they didn't stay quiet. They marched. They recorded a message with Luciano's mom, like asking for him back. They put it on speakers and they would drive around town.
Oh my God.
Playing it. I'm going to cry. It's so sad. They would play this out loud. They interrupted like government meetings, protesting. They did a lot. But we're not going to do is track them down, and like what Miriam did, because they were like scared. And I think the dad, he was interviewed by the New York Times, and he says like, we can't all be like Miriam, and I don't know if that's the right word, commend her for her bravery, but I'm not that brave. Like I'm scared, and look what happened to her.
Well, even honestly, even them protesting in this way, even that could make them a target, because you know, it's unfortunate, but and I could of course understand what he's saying about, and not everyone, like, you shouldn't have, Miriam should not have had to do what she did, and this family should also, even like, ideally, you know, ideally nothing like this would happen, but, and it did, but like ideally the government would respond the way it's supposed to, law enforcement would investigate the way they're supposed to, instead of being in bed with the cartels.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't until this happened with Luciano that the group that Miriam started really started picking up again with their attempts to fight back, protest. So yeah, it's, and her funeral, thousands attended her funeral. They all knew who she was. She was buried next to Karen in the... Ugh, I'm gonna cry. I need a moment.
Yeah.
They have these, like, I don't know if they're cedar trees, but it was this part of El Panteón of the cemetery with, like, trees above it, and they're next to each other. They're, like, 3 plots down from Luciano.
Oh, wow.
It's terrible. And even in death, Miriam managed to catch the last person on her list.
Really?
Even after her death, yeah. So 1 month after her death, authorities in Veracruz found the final person on Miriam's list.
They found the other puta.
Yeah, exactly. And they only found her because of Miriam's intel. That's why they knew where to look. So she was a former member of Los Zetas. She had fled to Veracruz. She was involved in beating and torturing Karen during her captivity. Then she fled to Veracruz to raise her son. And yeah, Miriam did the work, gave it to Veracruz officials, and they found her with Miriam's information.
Good.
2 weeks before her own death, Miriam had updated her WhatsApp status to say, a pesar de tanto dolor, sigo creyendo y esperando en Dios y no pienso parar, solo muerta, no he podido sepultar completa a mi hija. Despite so much pain, I continue to believe and hope in God, and I don't plan to stop. She just died. I have not been able to bury my daughter completely. And again, they were still missing parts of Karen. They did the funeral because they had most of her, but not all of her. And that's a big deal for
yeah.
a lot of people.
Well, isn't the belief, the Catholic belief, if I'm remembering right, that you have to be whole, your body has to be whole to enter heaven or something like that?
Yeah, I think so. And it also has, it's a, like, I know it's a thing with Muslims too, because I know that's such a big thing in Palestine right now, where like, no, a lot of people are not complete, and it's such a another insult on top of that, because now their beliefs are,
yeah,
I mean, they can't, you know, go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they kept searching for her, or trying to search for her, demanding the authorities to search for her. You can find a bronze statue of Miriam in La Plaza Central of San Fernando, and there's a plaque that reads, Aprendí que el coraje no es la ausencia de miedo, sino el triunfo sobre él. El hombre valiente no es aquel que no siente miedo, sino el que conquista el miedo. I learned that courage is not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. The brave man is not one who does not feel fear, but the one who conquers fear. Although I feel like they should have put woman, not man. But
I was going to say, and the statue of a woman.
Yeah, woman. But yeah, she is still loved by, you know, so many and remembered and visited. That plaque of hers is, yeah, it's there. And yeah, it's just like we've been saying this whole time. It's just a tragic, tragic case. Like I've seen people covering it and they're like, oh, it's so inspiring. But to me, it's just so sad and unfair. And obviously this is a strong, strong, fierce woman who had to do this, but it's like, she shouldn't have had to do this.
Yeah.
It makes me think of, there's, I think we've talked about this before too, but there's a clip and I don't know her name because I can't remember it right now, but there's a clip that goes viral almost every like International Women's Day of a woman. And it was when the march in Ciudad Mexico got like violent and women like broke and burned down like buildings, which honestly, I'm here for.
I'm here for it.
But there's one woman who says, who cares? Who cares if I burn down the world? Like you, she was my world and you took her and you're not doing anything about it. And obviously it's all in Spanish. And she's like a mom whose daughter was killed. And she's saying this and all these stories just make me think of her, or also of Vanessa Guillen's mom being, you know, outside of her hood by herself with the sign. Rufina Amaya, who we've talked about.
Yes. Yeah.
All these women, just
all the women we've talked about. Yeah.
Yeah. Fighting, not a chance to grieve.
Yeah.
And honestly, like going up against the world for their children, it's just sad.
It is. It is. And yeah, definitely the main takeaway also for me, like you, is not how inspiring it is. And of course it is. That's not to diminish that, but it shouldn't have to be, like you said, inspiring. Like these women, these mothers, these families should have been allowed the time to grieve and to process and to heal. And instead they had to fight and fight and fight and fight. And then they were killed for it.
Yeah. And then after all that, they were killed many times by the same people that killed their own daughters. Sorry, my voice is done. But yeah, that was the case of Miriam Rodriguez. And I'll put pictures up here so everyone can see her bright, fiery hair that matches her fiery spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't gonna do a listener story, but I was like, you know what? I guess we should have like something to undepress me specifically. So now we're gonna move on to our listener story. And if you have a story that you want us to read, you can email us spookytales@gmail.com. You can DM us on any of our socials. You can submit it on Discord. We have a channel that says submit your scary story. You can also call the Spooky Hotline. That number is in the show notes. Or you can record a voice note and email it. All those are options. Carmen's gonna read it because my voice is done. I've been sick. I'm a little better, but my voice is done. Yeah, so yeah.
All right. So here goes the listener story. Hi, chicas. Big fan of y'all. I really love the podcast. I listen through Spotify. I have two stories to tell you. I don't know if you find it as spooky or not, but I thought they did to me. To start on the first story or event, it happened to my aunt who lives in Guanajuato in un rancho. This happened a long time ago. One night she was coming back from work and she would walk every day from work to the house. And one specific night she was walking near this baseball field and she said that she saw this figure of a man leaning against a tree. And she passed beside him and told him, buenas noches, good night. And she said that the moment he lifted his head, he had red glowing eyes and she just walked faster home.
Oh no, that was Satanás. That was the devil.
That was Satanás himself.
Oh my God, that's so creepy.
Yeah, that's terrifying. I definitely would have ran home.
I would have thrown up.
Yep, that's scary. Okay, so the next one. My next story happened to my sister, my cousin, my niece, and my nephew. This happened back in 2015 in the rancho where I'm from in Guanajuato. I went to Mexico to celebrate my quinceañera. And one day when we were in practice and we had to cut it short because it started to rain and didn't stop until dark, one of my damas couldn't be picked up by her sister because it was muddy and the motorcycle could slide through the mud. So we decided to walk her home. Makes sense. And then in parentheses, she says, my mom didn't know we were going to walk all the way to our house, which was far from where we were having the practice. We walked her. And when we were coming back, we walked through the baseball field
Oh no, not the baseball field.
The one that the aunt.
Okay, wow.
And we were holding umbrellas because it started to drizzle and we started to feel like something was flying, or I don't know how to explain it, but something moved the umbrellas from our hands. And then we started hearing something far, like moving through the bushes. I just remember we were so scared that we decided to not look back, and I would have done the same.
Mm-hmm.
And we just ran because we just kept feeling something following us. And in our minds, we just kept saying it's nothing. And it was just some cows following us. But my cousin looked back. She saw nothing following us. And we just ran home. Till this day, I just want to keep it in my head that it was a cow following us.
It was the cows.
Sure. If that makes you feel better, it was a cow.
I would have told myself something like that too. Like, oh, it was from las vacas. Like, don't worry. It was just the cows mooing behind us. Like, oh my God. It's horrible that it was the same baseball field, because that immediately makes me think that, no, sorry, it was not the cows. It was actually...
It was Satanás.
Seriously.
Yeah.
That was creepy. Wow. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your story. That was for sure a spooky.
Very a spooky.
Yeah. I got scared for sure.
Yeah, me too.
That's it. Don't cross baseball fields at El Rancho.
And if you do, don't look back. Just run.
Don't look back. And it was the cows. For sure, the cows. And yeah, stay a spooky. We'll catch everyone next time. Bye.